terrific conversation with Maurice Alberti. She is absolutely one of the best cinematographers in the business. And Jerry, you and I have discussed some of the work that she's done. We're just awe-inspiring work.
Yes, they are.
Documentary world, stuff like Crumb and Taxi to the Dark Side and narrative films, Happiness and Velvet Goldmine and on and on and on. I mean, she really, these are challenging, important films that have something to say.
They are, absolutely.
And those are the kinds of projects she gravitates towards. I mean, she's a true artist, and this was a great conversation. So enjoy it. This is our talk with Maurice Alberti.
I grew up in the south of France. I didn't have a TV. I didn't see a TV until I was 12 years old. My grandmother had the first TV on the block, which the whole, like half of the village would go see on Wednesday night. And it was a recorded play. It was called Au Théâtre ce soir, to the theater tonight. So I just fell in love like with movies when I first came to the States, because I stayed with people who had the TV in every room, which was the most amazing thing for me. And then that was a long time ago. That was 35 years ago. And there was films, you know, the late show, the late, late show. So I was watching movies until 4 o'clock in the morning. And that's when I fell in love with movies.
What, were there movies that were a particular influence on you?
Oh, over the years after, you know, I don't know, influence, you know, but, you know, they're the classic, like, Apocalypse Now, all the Godfather movies, or Woman in the Dunes, was a black and white Japanese movie. What's this movie with Marlon Brando in France? I forgot.
Oh, the one in France. I know there was Last Tango in Paris.
Yeah, that's the one. That's really,
oh, amazing.
All the Bertolucci film. I mean, you know, and movies still influence me, you know.
Yeah.
So, no, then when I came to the States, you know, I took pictures of my friends in rock and roll bands, and then somehow, and I'm sure you know that, I ended up on the X-Rated.
Yes, ma'am.
Where I was the still photographer. So I did that for a few years to pay the rent, and it was sort of an amazing scene. And I have a collection of pictures from X-Rated movies that eventually I made into some artwork that I've shown in galleries. And
So how did that first job as a cinematographer or as a camera operator, how did that come into play?
I don't know. You know, when I started to work on X-Rated movies, I met people, you know, that I mean, like, the crews in New York were then, like, young people out of Columbia or NYU. Mm-hmm. It was kind of the training ground. I mean, one of the training grounds. So I met people. I started to, you know, since I didn't do a film school, that was kind of my film school where I'm, you know. And someone that I met introduced me to someone, and I got my first job as an assistant on the film set. And then in the meantime, I had a little Super 8 camera, so I shot little movies for my friends, you know. And I kept on working as an assistant. And I worked on documentaries a lot, because I didn't like to work as an assistant on a feature film. But on documentaries, as an assistant, you get to do a little bit of lighting. You're very close to the director. You're very involved because it's a crew of 3 or 4 people.
Right.
And then eventually someone gave me a chance to shoot a documentary, and then the first full-length documentary that I shot called H2 Worker, directed by Stephanie Black, who I stayed a very good friend of mine, won Best Documentary at Sundance, and I won Best Cinematography, which was kind of a shock.
Yeah, that's terrific. So many people that we talk to, obviously it sounds like you learned by doing, actually doing it. But so many people we talk to have that one mentor or someone that kind of guided them and taught them a lot. Was there someone like that for you?
No, I wish there had been. I wish there had been, but there was not. there are people who gave me chances along the way, you know. Then Todd Haynes, I shot his first movie, The Poison. My first feature was The Poison, and again, that film was very controversial because there was a gay subject, and it was funded by some government fund, and there was a lot of scandal around that. So automatically, you know, it made a lot of publicity in the film. And if you do good work on a good movie, a movie that's being looked at and talked about, then, you know, again, you make a step forward. It's a little bit
right.
like what's happening now with The Wrestler. If The Wrestler was a bad movie, nobody would be talking about me. You would not be interviewing me, you know what I mean?
Sure, we would. I look at your resume, and it's amazing work. I love so much of these films.
They're great.
But such a imprint that you've had in the documentary world as well. And what's the appeal of working in that medium? I would think that you just meet the most incredible people in the most amazing situations.
Yeah, 2 years ago I did a movie called In God's Name, where we traveled all around the world and
mm-hmm.
met 13 of the world religious leaders. And the highlight was I spent a week with the Dalai Lama in Dharamsala in northern India. And I actually spend a week with him, you know. So yeah, you get to meet, you know, I've been down in the mines in Bolivia, and I filmed the King of Spain or Gorbachev or
right.
the Pope of Dalai Lama. I like documentary for two reasons, because it's always, I mean, the film that I have chosen and that eventually come my way, it's always an adventure.
Mm.
And it's always a lesson in the world, you know. You enter those little worlds that make up the big world, you know. So
right.
you learn something very intensely. Like right now I'm doing a documentary on Lance Armstrong, who is going back to try to win the Tour de France after 2 years
mm-hmm.
of absence. So I'm not especially interested in cycling, but I'm in this world, and it's kind of a fascinating world. And then, like, the athleticism and, you know, that you require to do something like the Tour de France is kind of amazing, you know. So now I'm in this world. Like a couple of years ago, I did a Taxi to the Dark Side, that won an Academy
yeah.
Award, and you just enter the world of politics and the army and all those things that are hidden from us. And then also what happened in Abu Ghraib. So I like docs for that. And then also, you know, from a cinematographer, a point of view, you learn how to work with very simple tool with very few people. You know, it's not a big machine around you. It's very small.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes after doing a feature where you have to deal with 100 people and deal, you know, with a lot of personality and a lot of pressure, you know, docs is it's another way of working. It's more instinctual. You know, it's less intellectual, I find. Although you want to think about the style of your documentary, but in the end, you know, I think that documentary always sort of remind me. I mean, I've been to China, India, and South America. It sort of reminds you how privileged our life is.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
how lucky we are. And sometimes when you complain about, you know, your rate or you work long hours, which is all true, you know, sometimes you just think about that woman you've seen taking care of 3 kids with no money, was to work the field, and you say, okay,
yeah.
I have it very well, I have it very good. So that's why I like the world of documentary.
We love documentaries on this show, and we champion quite a few of them.
Uh-huh.
And you mentioned Taxi to the Dark Side,
mm-hmm.
and I think that the documentary form has done very well with covering the state of the world, particularly in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what your thoughts on that are, and whether you see that documentaries changing in the, you know, with the new administration, and it feels like kind of a new generation coming on. I know that particularly with Iraq and Afghanistan and the torture issues that you covered with Taxi to the Dark Side and other documentarians have covered
then hopefully we can go to Iraq and make a documentary about some amazing survival and rebuilding story, you know,
mm-hmm.
instead of making a documentary about an amazing, destructive and torture story, you know.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, and then, you know, unfortunately, I mean, you know, the world is a big, big dark side, and human beings have a dark side, and nature has a dark side. So I think the documentary are always going to find a story to take the dark side and the amazing you know, side of human beings, you know, and
mm-hmm.
they don't all have to be dark, you know.
Yeah.
So I I hope also because Obama, I know a lot of people have been campaigning to ask Mr. Obama to create a minister of culture, which a ministry of culture. With you know, there are a lot of things like that in Europe. You know, France has a ministry
right.
of culture, and there's no such a thing in the United States. And it would be great if he, you know, if he created something like that. That really help filmmakers to get funded and to do more documentaries. You know.
Mm-hmm. I know that. Obviously, the digital revolution has really taken over
yes.
the past few years.
Yes.
Do you still prefer film, or is digital really invaluable for a documentarian, this technology now?
I think now. I mean, you know, do I still in general do I prefer film? I'm gonna answer. You know, it depends on the story. Like with The Wrestler, we thought at one point, you know, maybe we should go digital, will work faster, be cheaper. And then I really thought, you know, and I spoke with Darren, no, I think that this movie, this story, would be best be told in 16 millimeter. You know,
yeah.
like the grain of the film. But some story are best told in a digital world. Like in documentary, I think it's a question of economics, you know. Like one of the staple of documentaries is interviews.
Right.
You know, whether they like it or not, but able to roll the camera, to roll, you know, to get that moment, you know, that tells you, you know. So I think, you know, when we did H2 Worker, which was, I don't know, 15 years ago or 18 years ago, H2 Worker is about the Jamaican farm workers who cut the sugar cane in slave camp in Florida, you know. And we went to Jamaica with 5 rolls of film because we didn't have any money. And you had to be very careful the question you ask and when you roll. And I'm glad that now, you know, you can go with a few tapes and you can, you know, you can roll. And instead of doing an interview, you can have a conversation, you know.
Right.
So I think for documentary, it makes a lot more sense. And with the new cameras, I mean, some of them look really great. I've been trying this EX3 camera that I went to look at a test, blown up to 35. It's amazing. It looks.
It is,
looks
isn't
great.
It? I mean, this. It has arrived. This. It really
yeah,
has.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, of course, if you compare it to 35, it's not as sharp as you know. It's not film, but that's not really what makes a good film. So if you can roll a little bit more, if the cameras are smaller, you know, it makes such a big difference, you know.
Well, my understanding is, from reading about the preparation for The Wrestler, this is one of the reasons why Aronofsky wanted to go with you, because of your documentary experience. I think one of the reasons was it was important to him to follow the lead character wherever he goes and to have that kind of openness with the lighting.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you know, first when I first met with Darren or first talked to him on the phone, he mentioned his big reference in the style of the film was the movies of the Dardenne brothers. You know those guys, the Belgium brothers who did Rosetta and The Child. And you know, if you know them, you know their style of camera is handheld and following people. And so I think because I do documentary, and you know, he was interested in working with me because also I've done very stylized movie. You know, I mean, like I've did a movie like Velvet Goldmine, but I also done documentary. So
right,
the director
right.
knows I can do a feature, I can light, but I also. You know, so I think he was interested in that, and that I was willing to work very simply. Sometime when you know, and he wanted, of course, to give a lot of freedom to Mickey to move about and to improv, which we did. And you know, often he would ask me to light so he could shoot a 360, which is a dream of a lot of directors, you know. And sometimes I could and sometimes I could not, but he's smart enough and knows enough about movies when you know. So it was a really great collaboration. And then you know, when I heard him say, you know, sometimes we're gonna do 10 takes or 15 takes, you know, I think I had the smartness to know that it was going to be too much physically, too light to shoot a 15 take. So I hired, I find a fabulous camera operator, Peter Nolan, who did, you know, most, I mean, all the handheld work in the film. And
wow.
it was a savior because he was really great. He's great at hand holding. And he had an amazing energy, 15, 20 takes. He was still going with great attitude. So I was very lucky to have found him.
Now you actually, talking about some of the previous work you've done and the adventures you've been on with these projects, I would take it that you knew very little about wrestling before starting the picture. What was important for you to know about the actual sport prior to working on it?
Well, you know, during the time of prep, every weekend, you know, Darren, and producer, and costume designer, and whoever wanted to go, you know, Darren is great to try to really involve and bring people along in the adventure, not as, you know, just as a job, but in an adventure. Come with me, you know. And so we made it a party every Saturday night. Went to see wrestling. And it was really good, I think, for all of us. For me, it was really good to see the world, to see it's kind of a little bit of a traveling the circus, to see how they travel with one set of lighting, you know, like, and to, you know, to try to keep that world as real. I mean, the whole film is at a very naturalistic look. So when we look at location and when I went to look at the wrestling match, I tried to make it work for the drama of the film, but to keep it as real as possible. So you felt that you were in a real place. And you were,
mm-hmm.
because all of the match were actually part of a real promotion. The director and the producer worked with real wrestling promoters who allow us to come in the promotion and shoot Mickey in the ring once in a while. And all the wrestlers that you see in the movies are all professional wrestlers. And Mickey was trained by professional wrestlers that sometimes were in the ring with him.
Obviously, Mickey Rourke is astonishing in this movie. And I'm wondering, from your point of view, behind the lens, could you sense that this was a very profound experience for him?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that Mickey Rourke is the movie. You take Mickey out of the movie, you put somebody else, you know. And and Darren was very, very smart and very brave.
So what are you doing right now?
What am I doing?
You know, I thought maybe we could, you know, stop by our old favorite place.
We have an old favorite place.
You'll recognize it when you see it.
Now's not really the best time. I got some stuff I gotta do.
What kind of stuff?
Stuff?
Come on, I'm not gonna take a bite out of you or anything. Just, you know, hang out for a little while.
Like when I first talked about it, Nick Cage was supposed to do the movie. And the budget was twice the size, and everybody's rates was twice the size. And Darren, you know, was very smart and very brave. So, you know what? This is not the movie I want to make. This is not going to work. And it's not a reflection. I think that Danny Cage is a very good actor. He was just not the part. And Mickey is a wrestler. His body, the history of his body, and his own story is a parallel, you know. So, you know, I thought it was a very smart choice from Darren. And Mickey, you know, is a very good actor.
He's fantastic.
People sort of forget. We just sort of remember the bad boy, the fucked up, he disappeared. But he's a very good actor, and he worked very hard. And I mean, it was such a pleasure and a privilege to be there. Like when you film, it's kind of a theater where you're 3 feet away from the actors, you know. And it was great. The whole experience was so great. It's one of those moments where everybody was perfect. You know, the director, the producer Scott Franklin was great. Mickey was being Mickey, but he was, from the stories I've heard, he was quite well-behaved and aware that it was his chance.
Yeah.
And he did it.
Oh, I've always idolized Mickey Rourke from that 80s work he's done. So I am so pleased for him. Let me ask you a question about actors.
Mm-hmm.
Because I found this quote, I believe Todd Haynes said this about you. He said, actors respond to you with a great deal of trust and affection. They sort of fall in love with you. He's talking about you. What is that relationship that you have with the actor generally?
I mean, I always sort of like, I think I have a lot of respect for actors. I could never do what they do. I don't want to be in front of the camera. So I have a lot of respect, and with the respect to I want to nurture and I want to establish a trust, you know. And I've always had a very good time, and Mickey was at the beginning. You had to set boundaries, you know, but I got to really love him, and I think he really liked me and respected me, and we had a great working relationship. I don't know. I mean, I think the first thing is come a love and respect of actors and
right.
a respect for the craft, you know, and knowing, you know, that my job is there to work with the director so he or she can tell the stories, and to allow the actors, you know, as much a space and trust as they need to give us what's going to make a good film.
Now, some of these directors that you've worked with, you know, we've talked about the documentary form and how that translates for you into your narrative work. There are some terrific narrative directors who you've collaborated with. Are these directors different, the ones that work in regularly in both mediums in your eyes?
It's, well, someone like Michael Apted, who would do a James Bond movie and Gloria in the Mist, and then, you know, he's in the jungle in Madagascar and he has to carry my tripod because I can't climb the hill with a camera and the tripod, you know. I think different. I don't know how to answer that. I think a lot of documentary directors would like to do movies. I don't know.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone like Michael is a pretty special. There's not a lot like him, you know, in traveling both worlds, you know.
Yeah. There seems to just be like a tremendous versatility and curiosity about
him?
Them. Particularly about him, yes, ma'am.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's why I like him as a person, too, you know. I think, you know what, his main attribute, he really cares. He really cares about the subject that of his films, you know, what he's talking about. And whether he does a Hollywood movie of Gorilla in the Mist, you know, or he's... you know, I went with him and I did a film on the student of Tiananmen Square where we went underground in China, in Beijing, you know. He really cares. And I think that's also one of the essence of a good documentary filmmaker. You know, for people to give you and to trust you, you know, you have to listen. They have to feel that you care, that you're listening,
yeah.
that they are important. That's one of the, you know, the first thing of a good documentary filmmaker. To be humble, to be small, and to listen, and to tell people, I care about your story. I'm here to listen. And you not believe how many people need that in their life. And then the power of the camera. You know, I mean, at times we joke and we call it, it's a new confessional, you know. People
yeah.
want to be heard. They want to be, for that moment, they want to be special, you know. And it's powerful.
Very much so. Now, do you have a secret desire? Obviously, you've done a work across the board. You're very versatile yourself, but a secret desire to do that big budget sci-fi summer movie?
My son does for me. that big budget sci-fi. You know what? If the big budget sci-fi is a good film, then yes. You know, I was talking with someone. I won't tell, about the biggest. A budget that was ever offered to me, you know, and I just didn't get into the story. I just,
right.
you know. So, you know, for me, the big budget thing means that it's more time, means I'm going to go away from home for 5 or 6 months. I have a son who is 15 now. So to be a big budget or sci-fi, it's not enough for me to go away that long. It has
right.
to be good. I have to feel... I'm doing something that I care about.
Now, the Independent Spirit Awards
mm-hmm.
are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get nervous about award shows or?
Extremely. I'm not even sure that I'm gonna go because I have a fear, like more phobia of speaking in public, and I would go to the Spirit Award if I could be assured that I didn't win. So it's like the stupidest thing. I'm sorry. I do get invited often to speak on panels, and I always feel like such a loser, you know that. I have a fear, but, you know, like I can get a rash or my heart is beating too. It's, you know, it's a phobia. So I've never been to the Spirit Award. I won once. I was nominated another time. In Sundance, I won twice. The first time for H2 Worker, I was in such a shock. I had a rash on my neck the whole evening. And on Crumb, I just didn't go. I won somebody else to get for me. So I'm not good at that, and I wish I was better. But yeah, someone should take a Valium. So I'm just so out of it. I'm not sure it would be a good image to put out there, you know.
Well, I understand your anxiety. I understand that, but you've just done amazing work, and this is an amazing movie, and I just got to tell you, I love all of your work. And I'm kind of in awe by your resume here. So there's nothing to feel nervous about on that front. So I hope you go and you enjoy the event.
Well, thank you very much.
And I appreciate your time very much. Come back anytime you'd like in the future, and thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you.